Hi everyone, welcome back to the Way Home podcast. As you can probably hear, today's episode will be in English because I had a beautiful conversation with Sarah from the US and I came across her page when she followed me on Instagram and I had a look at her work, and I immediately knew that we had to talk. There had to be a conversation, and so I asked her if she wanted to come on, and she said yes. And this is just one of those conversations that you can listen to when you're having your tea, when you're sitting in the sun, if there's any sun today, or on your walk. But in general, it's for me, when I re-listen to it, it's a deeply nourishing conversation where there's so much space for softness and gentleness and ease. And yeah, so we talk about many things. We talk about her work as a clinical psychotherapist. We talk about sensitivity, we talk about creativity, but we talk about intentional solitude, we talk about feminine archetypes, we talk about feminine embodiment, about the divine. There's so much information in here, and I feel like even if you don't actually listen to what we're saying, there's still such a big shift in energy that can be felt, or at least that was my experience during our conversation, and also afterwards when I was re-listening. And you know, sometimes people can bring out something very specific in you that you don't always have very specific access to. I have an open identity center in human design, and so I'm not always sure of who I am and how I come across in the world. And when I was rewatching our conversation, there was such tenderness in both of our stories and ways of expressing. And I just love that when that happens, when people can kind of bring out that part of me even more than usual. So yeah, Sarah also shares her reading list. So I'll be putting all the information about Sarah, her work. She does online sessions as well. And she sent me a reading list of all the books that she recommends. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while now, you know that I love to read. And I'm an online in human design, so I love to explore and dig very deep and collect all the information and all the data on something. So I'm so happy. My heart felt so full when she sent me this list of books, because now I have the next thing to dive into, which always makes me very happy. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the conversation.
I can't remember exactly how I found you, but I'm really glad that I did, and we're here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like there was a lot of resonance I felt with just the way that you were sharing about your yoga. And do you do human design as well? Mm-hmm. Are those your two main areas?
Yeah, I would say so. It's like yin somatic yoga and in general, I would say like embodiment, and then human mm-hmm. design is kind of for me a tool for embodiment, just like yoga or movement. Yeah.
Amazing.
Do you know your human design?
I am a reflector.
Oh.
I don't know much about it, but I know that that's what I am.
So. I've never met a reflector before, or not consciously anyway. Obviously, uh-huh. I've probably met some people that I just don't know what their profile is or their type is, but it's so rare to be a reflector.
Oh, okay.
It's like 1% of the population. So,
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
And I can totally see that. I can totally see that you're a reflector.
Wow. Yeah, you could probably tell me more about it than I
yeah, it's
know,
like,
but
it's like because you're fully open, you know, you have all these centers in human design, you're completely open, you don't have any definition in your centers, which means that you're very, like, you're kind of seen as, or the reflector type is seen as the mirror of society. And it's only when all the reflectors are healthy that we actually know that society is functioning in the way that it should be, because you're taking in all the energies of the world in all your centers. So like the emotions of the world, the thoughts of the world, the ideas, the inspirations, the identities, the ambitions, the pressures, the desires, and you're kind of amplifying them. So this is like, those are the most sensitive types, because you're like, there's not a lot of protection against the influence of the outer world, you know. I don't know if that's your experience.
That definitely resonates.
And I would think that that would be a very good quality, or like a very good type to be doing what you're doing, which is I'm assuming, like, I read on your Instagram that you're doing like an internship, or is that finished?
Yeah, I'm doing an internship.
And that's like, it's like a psychoanalysis or psychotherapy, or
it's psychotherapy. Yeah, it's clinical psychology. So I'm in my, it's like a 5-year degree here, in the US, which is to be a psychologist. So I'm in my 5th year, halfway through with that now. So. Yeah, I'll be graduating in a few months.
Wow.
And starting a private practice under supervision for my next residency year. Yeah.
And how has that been, the internship?
It's been good. A lot of learning.
Yeah.
It's the first time it's the first time I've ever done like full-time therapy work. Mm-hmm. So that's been a big learning curve there. But so yeah, it's good though. It's but I definitely resonate with like what you're saying about like taking in other people's like energy, I guess.
Yeah,
definitely. It's like that part of it is very tiring. So it's been a lot of learning about that. And
do you have any practices to kind of come back into your own energy?
Yeah, it's something that I'm learning, I think, but like simple things, like I go for a walk on my lunch break, and I do like probably another walk after work, and so I spend a lot of time outside and just kind of like listen to music, or there's spiritual practices that I have as well, like just lighting candles in the house, or praying the rosary, and really drawing on the divine to guide and to center, and help me with that.
Do you feel like you've always had this connection to the divine, or is this something that you cultivate later in life?
I think for me, it's been pretty lifelong. I was raised in a Christian house. And so we were always very involved in church and in like evangelical charismatic Christianity. And so that was like my childhood growing up. And then I did a couple of years of ministry school. And so I was pretty like steeped in that environment for a long time. And then kind of, I guess after I got married at 24 and kind of started to, I don't know, there were a lot of like issues in our marriage early on that kind of changed how I was experiencing Christianity and like So growing up, I was, I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase of like purity culture, but it was this idea of like, oh, you're not supposed to date before you're married or like have sex before you're married. And so like, it was very like, my body is dangerous and I shouldn't like, I shouldn't enjoy things. I can't really like have pleasure in my body or definitely not experience that with another person. And so then once I got married, it was like this really like stark difference of like, oh, like my body is supposed to be this sexual being now that I can't like grapple with kind of like how much shame I felt about that. And so all that to say, yeah, I kind of like deconstructed from my Christianity that I had growing up. And that's where I found like the divine feminine and that whole teaching that's very like much centered in Jungian psychology for me. So that was kind of like my way into that. And so, yeah, for the past like 7 or so years, that has been something that I have been exploring of like the feminine and embodiment that comes with that and just the spirituality that is not so like the monotheistic like Father God, that whole culture that I grew up with. So
yeah, I think it's so interesting because, well, I grew up also in like, I would say Catholicism, but not, it wasn't practiced actively. You know, we went to church, like we didn't go to church, but we had our communion and we had our baptism and, but it wasn't very present in the sense that we didn't really, like we weren't really religious or we didn't, there wasn't really much talk of God or anything beyond the physical and beyond the material realm.
Yeah.
So I never really had that experience. And then, I don't know how, like for me, I was really looking for that, but in a way, and I didn't consciously do this, but in like a very unconscious way, I was looking for this connection, but without the rules. And I felt like, even because obviously like I practice yoga, I've been practicing yoga for 10 years, but even within yoga, you have the system, you have the 8 limbs, you have like your guru, you have, this is the way that you practice, especially if you practice, for example, something like Ashtanga yoga, you have your teacher and they tell you, when are you ready to go into the next series? Or when are you allowed to practice the next pose? Which there's obviously a lot of value to have this mentorship and someone who can kind of transfer these ideas or these concepts. But then at some point, even within the yoga, in my yoga practice, I started to notice that my body, like nobody trusted my body or trusted their own body. It's like we're outsourcing the authority to someone else. And I think that happens literally in every, I don't know, like every sector of life, you know, like in within relationships, within marriage, but also within work. And within even within creativity, or I don't know. And there was something that kind of didn't feel right to me, but again, not very conscious. I didn't like, I didn't have the idea of like, I need to go look for a way to find this inner authority. But this is kind of what happened when I came across human design, which is all about, we all have our own inner authority. And no one else can tell us what is right for us. And once I started to deepen my knowledge of that system, it's like learning or understanding that I've always, and I think we all do this, we all outsource this authority. And I feel like the same thing happens within religion. And within, like, even within some spiritual practices as well, obviously there's always like something to gain, but then trusting that whatever we resonate with
you know, whatever practice or whatever part of the practice we resonate with, we can take that and we can make it our own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also how I came across, like, even because I'm transitioned from Ashtanga yoga, Hatha yoga towards more yin yoga practices and more restorative, which are a lot more about the nervous system and how can we kind of calm down this pressure or this over, like this feeling of being overworked and always going, like crossing our own boundaries. But even within that system, it's like these were the poses. And this is the way to sequence a class. This is the way to teach a class. Mm-hmm. And then I came across somatics and somatic yin. And then it was like, okay, so even within, like within the yin pose, you can trust that your body will know how to move into the pose and move out of the pose and how long to stay there and which pose feels good and which pose doesn't. And and then attuning to this kind of sensitivity that we all have, but that we've been taught for many of us that we need to suppress.
Right.
And then, like, I've read that you've also shared about this, like this, I think the words you use were exquisite sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, whenever I feel someone, like I see someone kind of leaning into that sensitivity or fully embracing that as part of who they are and the way that they express themselves, it feels like an exhale, you know, like there's a weight lifted off my shoulders and it feels like, okay, I'm not the only one, you know, having this experience. Yeah. And wanting to deepen that sensitivity instead of numb it or instead of, you know, push it out.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's so important.
Yeah.
That sensitivity. Yeah.
It is.
A exquisite sensitivity. That was a phrase that one of my mentors said about me was we were talking and I came into like my graduate program quite numb, I feel like. And so it was difficult for me to like access my emotions or access like the wisdom of the body in myself. And like, as I sat with practicum clients, and that was like a big realization, was like, I wasn't numb. Like I was very sensitive to things. And shutting down as a way of protecting. And yeah, it's been a process of learning to like trust the sensitivity rather than be like ashamed of it or just like suspicious of it or like need to be in control of that, I guess, and just like trusting that there's so much strength and inner wisdom that comes when we can just lean into that more and trust that the feelings and the emotions that we do have there are so important and so needed and so valuable in the world.
And how do you describe that process for yourself of, you know, like the melting the numbness or connecting to that that wisdom or that sensitivity? How was that experience for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for me, it was like a process of learning to grieve and learning to kind of sit with heaviness of the pain of things that I had experienced, pain that the world is experiencing, pain that my clients had, you know, and carrying that and being okay with like, this is okay to feel and it's important to feel. And the only way like through that is to sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like before I was doing anything I could to avoid those things. And so yeah, really just being okay with holding that. And being with that, I guess, if that makes sense.
It does, because that's been, like, I've had a very similar experience. And for me, it's been mostly cultivating this safety around around the feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna die if I feel this. Which sounds extreme, but that was actually what my body thought that would happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I remember this time when not long after my, like, I had the breakup or whatever you want to call it with my partner, is that I had this experience of lying in my bed and it was dark and I was crying and I was literally like, I felt like I was back right after I was born. I was put in this, I don't know how to call it, like, you know, when, I don't know how that's, it's called in English, but when they put the baby separate from the mom, because they need to be looked after and they need to be taken care of. Because I had some issues when I was born with my stomach or my digestion. And it was literally like I was, because at that point as a baby, obviously if you don't know that someone is coming for you and it feels like you're dying if you're not with your mom or there's not someone safe with you. And I had that literal feeling of, oh my God, I am going to die. Yeah. There's no one here to come and save me. Mm-hmm. And just going through that experience and then after coming out of that experience, knowing, okay, I didn't die. You know?
Yeah.
But I feel like that it goes that deep.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have, like, obviously you have, I'm thinking you have clinical experience with this. And creating this safety for others or people to feel these emotions. Or what is your... what has your process been like for with, like, in your work and kind of guiding people towards that sensitivity or that feeling again?
Yeah. Like finding that safety. Mm-hmm. I love that, the way that you put that. It's like it has to be safe to feel the emotions. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And it's so true. Like in, I think there's like two different ways that I approach that. Like one would be like the clinical work that I do and that I'm like working toward, and then the other is like the energetic side of what I am trying to do now for people. But I think both are like really centered on presence and just being like with the person. And like you're talking about, like the just that image of being alone, being separate from your mom as an infant, and how terrifying and how painful that must have been in that moment, and how that same feeling then is like imprinted in your body and carried through your life to have this experience as an adult with your partner. Like, and I think it's really, that's the power of one-on-one work, is like you get to like, you get to hold that presence with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that can happen when you are witnessed by another person in what you were previously really alone in.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of like just that feeling of terror that comes with that, and like really, so like being the person to hold space for other people, it's something that I'm so like, I don't know, I have a lot of reverence for just that connection that you can really have with people one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does that energy work look like, or where does that come in?
Yeah, that's so I did like apart from my graduate program, I did like a mentorship with a woman named Morgan Day Cecil. And she, it's called the Feminine Wholeness Method that I have a certificate in, where it's based in like the energy centers, so like the chakra system, mm-hmm. and kind of connecting inward, which is what is so special that I think is just the ways that like the body knows, and like mm-hmm. her energy is so so wise, and we can tap into that and trust that and find places of like stagnant energy, I guess you could say, or like things that have been like patterned into our subconscious, whether it's in our lifetime or previous lifetimes or like ancestrally the things that we have inherited from our lineage. And so yeah, the energy work comes in as a way to like tap into that and really move through places of like dissonance, I guess, where it's like you get this opportunity to align more fully with like your purpose and like the inner wisdom and the divine within you. And so that's what I hope to be able to do there. It's pretty new that like I'm offering one-on-one sessions. It's something that I've done off and on in the past, but felt called to do it again. And so yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing there.
Yeah, I love how you use the word her to, or like calling the body a she. I've been doing, like, I've unconsciously switched that as well. I used to call it it. And now it's like identifying my body as this feminine vessel and this feminine. And yes, also, as you said, relating or connecting to that wisdom that is in there. And there are so many systems that are guiding us towards that wisdom. And something I've been exploring for a long time now. And I read Woman Who Run With the Wolves like 2 years ago or something.
Okay.
And I read it again last November. And I loved also, like, I saw that on your page that you also had picture. Mm-hmm. You also resonate with that work, and I think it's probably related to also the psychoanalysis and Jungian psychology and all these things. And I'm so interested in all that, because something in me is so like feels so seen when I'm reading this, even though sometimes I don't understand the language, or sometimes I have the visual, but I don't have the mental understanding. But it's like a bodily experience of knowing that there's so much truth in that. I'd love to learn more also about this like the subconscious. And is it something that Carl Jung, he talks about, or is it is it related to his work, or how do you bring those together?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Yeah, Carl Jung talks about the unconscious. And so the phrasing is a little bit different, but I think like the idea is the same, as like we have unconscious or like subconscious programming of like things that are hidden in the shadow out of our awareness that will like come up, and we might know it, we may not, or like I often think of it as like if you're having a strong like reaction to something, like that's probably something being triggered in the unconscious, that it's like, oh, like what is this for me to look at now? Like there's something here that wants my attention, of there's some growth to happen here. And yeah, I love the way that Clarissa Pinkola Estes kind of taps into that through myth and fairy tale. And like, yeah, that's a really beautiful book and beautiful work.
Yeah, because I also saw that you did your dissertation on the like feminine archetypes. And I'm curious how you connected to that and how that kind of, where that inspiration comes from, or that, you know, how that kind of entered your awareness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was through some of the books I was reading. So there was like Women Who Run With the Wolves. There was another book called Dance with the Dissident Daughter by Sue Monk. Is that who that is? Sue Monk Kidd? I might be wrong on that, but it was a from a Christian lens of like she had been some, I can't remember exactly what type of Christianity she was part of, but she was like the equivalent of like a priest in this religion. And she kind of like came out of that and had this experience of encountering the divine feminine. And so I think that's where like it started for me. And then that kind of brought me to the work of Marianne Woodman. I don't know if you know.
No,
another Jungian feminist, I would call her. And she had a book called The Pregnant Virgin, which is all about like women's journey of like finding that virginity, or that virgin being like she who is at one with herself. And so not like the Christian version of virginity, which is like never had sex, but like this idea of like I am whole and I can be at one with myself, and just how that was so like for Marianne Woodman, it was like embodiment was a huge part of that. And so yeah, my dissertation kind of came from those experiences of like reading about just different ideas of embodiment and spirituality, and kind of that intersection of the feminine with embodiment and spirituality. And in Western psychology, embodiment is very much like its own field of study. And so I didn't really feel like anything that I was doing was really like a new idea, but for the clinical psychology part of things, it was like there was room for me to study like experiences that people had had with divine feminine figures. And so I did that like through a Judeo-Christian lens of like if people had had encounters with Mary or Mary Magdalene or other saints, or just different like female Christian figures, and like had incorporated that into Christianity. That was kind of like how I made the study small enough that I could complete it in the timeline that I had. And so yeah, that was a really beautiful experience of being able to interview people and just hear about their stories and make it into a dissertation. So,
and what came out of those interviews? I'm curious. Like, what were people's experiences?
Yeah, they were so like so beautiful and so varied. It was really like some people had these really like mystical encounters or dreams or like visions, or like somebody would appear to them. And it was always like this life-changing encounter, I guess, that they had. Some people had done it through more of like their own personal study and research of like feeling called or feeling pulled to a figure, and then kind of just learning more about them and like finding that resonance within themselves, that whatever that pull was, that they were able to connect to the qualities of this divine figure in a way that like helped them be more at home in their bodies. And so there were many different things that I guess many different ways that it looked, but just like the common theme was that people were connecting to the feminine within themselves as a result of having some type of encounter with a divine feminine figure. And it wasn't like I did, the majority of the interviews were with women, but there were a couple men and a non-binary person that also did. And so it was like really interesting to see how the feminine was for everyone, and not just for women, but for like the world at large, and so needed.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I feel like I see it as this, in like general, I call it the energy of yin. Because obviously you have the yin and yang, but also because I'm practicing yin yoga, and I've noticed that I've been, even in my spiritual journey or even in my healing journey, I've always been called to the yin approach or the yin way of doing things, I would say. And it's so in contrast with my environment, or I think the world in general, but for specifically, I feel like, and I'm not sure how that's for you, obviously, in your experience in where you're living and the community that you're surrounded with. But
yeah,
for me, I've come from, or I live in a very, very young society and structure, and even like community, it's very much about doing and achieving. And even when you want to heal something, it's always like, how can we find this external remedy or this external solution that's very pragmatic, and it's very like step by step. And I feel like the power of what you're describing and what I've also felt and experienced in my work with yin and even human design, but I feel like everything I'm doing in general, it's like, okay, no, but the wisdom or the answer is within the being, and not within doing, and not within the trying to change. And my experience with my therapy or psychotherapy that I've been going to for, I think, almost 4 years now, it's as you said this, you mentioned this before, about being witnessed. It's all just about being witnessed and about what's coming up right now. And there's never been anything about like, you have to do this. These are the next steps. It's just about being, connecting together and exploring whatever is coming to the surface, but in this, so like, it's a very tender, loving experience. And I think even now I'm studying the gene keys. I don't know if you've heard about the gene key.
I've heard of it. I don't know much about it though.
It's like a study that, like a work that evolved out of the human design system. Because Richard Rudd, he's the writer of the Gene Keys. He was a student of the founder of human design. But he says it's the feminine path to, I would say, like finding your purpose or living your most authentic life, because it's just like, it's this book and you have 64 gene keys based on the 64 hexagrams in the I Ching, and you just read and you just contemplate, and there's no steps. You just take in the information, you just become aware of the patterns that are playing out in your life on a like an outer and inner level. And just from that witnessing, things will shift and you don't have to do anything. you know, and he talks about everything being in our DNA. All our potential is in our DNA. And we have to kind of, through being, through slowing down, through softening, he's always talking about softening the heart, kind of unwind the tensions, the patterns, the ancestral and generational trauma that is wound around ourselves and our physical being. We kind of start to dissolve that, but in the most gentle and loving and patient and tender way. And I think that is so, as you said, it's so needed.
Yeah.
Because you go online and you read, look, I try not to be online too much because I just get very overwhelmed by all these people from a very like good place, obviously, but very much from the mind and from the, this is the logical way to solve this or to do this. And I just, on a deep physical level, I don't resonate.
Yeah.
And I never have. I never felt like it felt correct for me to follow someone else's system. That makes sense. And I feel like what you're sharing is very much on that same frequency.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's so important to be able to like find that inner source of wisdom. And find, like, for me, it's the sacred that is there, like the divine that is there, and using that as a resource.
Because I think we're always taught that the divine is outside of us, you know. It's something to worship externally, and then once you realize that it's within you, because it's within everything and everyone, it gives you this power, or power not in the sense that we know it, but more kind of like you know, there's a responsibility as well, because you know that there's no external source that is going to, well, obviously we're always supported, you know, we're always taken care of, we're always guided. But it gives you this sense of, I have the same power as someone else.
Yeah.
And there is no hierarchy.
Right.
And if someone else can follow their dream, I can do too. Or if someone else can live out their purpose, I can do too. Yeah. Because there is no, we're all one. You know, we're all the same and at the same time so different, so uniquely different, because that's the whole premise of human design, is that we're all uniquely different. There's no person just like us, you know. Yeah,
it's so beautiful. I'm curious, like, what your process was for that, like coming to human design and the changes.
I think for me it was I've always experienced a lot of like depression and feeling very empty.
Yeah.
Very lost and empty, I would say. Like, there was always this void inside that I was trying to fill, or trying to get the answer of what it was that needed to be filled. And very disconnected from my body. I think I would say I've lived in dissociation for most of my life, you know, just not like having my soul be kind of here next to my body, next to my head, And there was no embodiment whatsoever. There was no connection to myself whatsoever. Obviously, this was necessary given the circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, growing up in an environment where there wasn't a lot of space for my inner experience, my sensitivity, my emotions, my needs, my desires.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, finding human design. I think it was in lockdown during COVID that I found it through Jazz. I don't know if you know Era Society.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jazz, I started following her on Instagram and she had these lives and she was talking about, she said she was the first one who told me, like not personally, but directed at us. So she said, you are God.
Mm.
And when she said that, I was like, what do you mean? I am God.
Yeah.
And I was just so, because I never believed, I wouldn't say that I believed in God. I would just say I didn't believe, but obviously that doesn't make any sense, but.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her telling me that, and I was like, oh, okay. So this is a whole new reality now.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was talking about human design, and that's how I found out I was a manifesting generator, and started reading all these things. And then I started deepening my knowledge of astrology as well. And it kind of was all this confirmation, just like a confirmation of all the things I already knew about myself, but were never acknowledged by my reality or outside world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once I started to kind of embrace those parts of myself, I feel like the whole journey has been just bit by bit, step by step, embracing or loving or accepting very small parts of myself in a very like gentle pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the whole journey about how can I accept this part? Okay, I feel some shame or guilt around this. Okay, that maybe needs or is a sign that it needs a little bit more love and understanding and nurturing and really cultivating this inner mother. That's I don't know if that's like a correct term, but that's been my experience of cultivating the inner mother of, okay, whenever I feel sad, I feel depressed, I feel down, I feel anxious, I feel overwhelmed, I feel empty, what would my internal mother say or do?
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't tell me to go and do this. She wouldn't tell me to just stop crying and get my life together and get my job done. She would sit with me and she would just patiently hold me and listen to whatever I was feeling and have create space for that.
Yeah.
So that's what I started to do with myself, and as an extension that all like that happens automatically also with people around you, you know, that you're, mm-hmm. I feel like the inner process is always reflected also on the outside. And so I started to do also in my classes, and I was starting to kind of teach or not teach, but share is, okay, whenever we feel we're in a pose, we're in a yin pose and we feel tension in our left shoulder, for example, our immediate response would be, how can I remove that tension? How can I put pressure on it? How can I stretch it so that the tension is gone? My approach is now, okay, but what, how can we accept and welcome that tension?
Yeah.
Because every tension in your body is just an ask to be loved, to be seen, to be embraced. And we can do that by breathing. We can do that by like very gentle touch, by just sending our awareness there. And that's just been my whole, especially in the last year or so, it's completely shifted the way that I experience life, the way that I experience my work, the way I experience my, when I'm teaching. It's not anymore about, okay, how can we change our bodies? How can we fit our bodies into this specific pose? How can we achieve this stillness or this relaxation that we're all looking for? Mm-hmm. But instead, how can we just be with what is and trust, like cultivating this trust, that's also so big. I feel like cultivating the trust that whatever is there for a reason, and we don't have to push it away. We don't have to change it. We don't have to fix it. It's just about the way that Richard Rudd describes it. Well, it's just about bringing the awareness, the conscious awareness. And on a physical level, it's literally how can you bring your awareness to this, for example, left shoulder? How can you feel what's going on there on a very felt sense, like sensorial, somatic level? So yeah, I don't know if that, that was an answer to what you were saying, but that's been my...
It's beautiful. And I love just that that shift of like being able to kind of move away from like, how do we fix this or how do we change this, to like, how do we accept and love and nurture this? And just how innately healing that is to just be with what is.
I know. And to know that that's all, you know, obviously we all have our journeys, you know, we all, I also now see that in my seeking, I found a lot of value as well. I've met a lot of people, I've had a lot of experiences, and I wouldn't change that. And I'm very grateful for everything, how everything played out and everything unfolded. But in the end, it's so simple. And it's like how Ram Dass says, just be here now. But I that didn't enter my brain, or that didn't enter my heart, or that didn't enter my body until recently, where it's like, oh, that's what they mean when they say be here now. Didn't know what that meant or how that could be experienced. And for me, the body is a very physical and the very feminine, like the feminine way into that presence. And it's not about, obviously I love to meditate and I love to sit in silence and just drink my tea and light my candles and look outside. And but it's not about just sitting there and emptying the mind or trying to empty the mind. It's about how can the body be the vehicle towards this presence and this acceptance and this nourishment.
That's beautiful.
What's your experience with embodiment? Like, how do you feel? Because my experience has been very like on a very like very very physical level of literally coming into the physical body. I'm just curious your perspective or your experience from your life experience and everything that you have learned in the past.
Yeah, I think for me, it's still very much a process. Like the irony of studying embodiment is that it was all very like head-based of like learning about embodiment. And so I feel like, for me, I feel most embodied when I am with my horses. So I have one horse. One of my horses just passed away at the beginning of the year. But yeah, when I am with horses, it's like there's nothing else that matters. There's nothing else that is like pulling my brain for attention. It's just like I'm completely at peace, and my full body, like even just talking about it and feeling it, of like just the relaxing that comes from that, and just the presence. And yeah, there's just not any need to do anything. You can just be. And and so that's something I'm trying to like integrate, like here where I'm living now, my horses are at home in Oregon, and so I don't have horses this year. And so that's something that I've had to like try and be really intentional about, finding places where I can feel embodied. And for me, it's like walking is one of those ways that like helps me with that. I would love to do yoga. I would love to be more like more like incorporate that more. But yeah, I think it's like movement, I guess, is always like the way that I find home in my body and being in nature. Yeah, it's a process, but I feel also that like as a student these past, I've been in school for 7 years now, like consecutive years now, and I'm just getting to the place in my life where I have time to devote to like myself again. And so that is something that really excites me about like finishing school. It's just having spaciousness to like incorporate more of these embodiment practices and tools that I've been studying so much about, and just being more like able to lean into those more, I guess. Yeah.
And how did you, or where did the move come from Oregon to Montana?
Montana, yeah. Yeah, it was a match system. So we, like last year, we applied to internships all over the country, and it really depends. So I applied to like 15 different places and ended up matching in Montana at a university here. So that's how I ended up. It was kind of just like a random thing that happened, but yeah.
And do you feel like, will you be staying there until after the internship, or just going back to Oregon?
I'm gonna go back. Yeah. Both my husband and I have family in Oregon, and like our communities are there, and the horses are there, and so yeah, this is a temporary move, but it's also been really wonderful to just like be here out like by ourselves and kind of like cultivating that closeness we have with each other. And the energy is really different here too, like with the mountains and like I don't know, it's very fiery energy here, where in the Northwest it's more watery. And so
yeah,
that's been a really interesting just difference of
I can imagine that. It's like, because obviously in the US you have like the big cities and it's busy, and but there's so much more space. You know, there's so much space to just, I don't know. And I really feel like, I could use some space. Because where I'm living, it's, Belgium is so densely populated. There's almost no space, just open space without it being designated to be like a forest that you can visit, or, you know, like a place where they cultivate crops, or like a farm or anything. But I'm just really feeling, I would love to at some point visit the nature part of the US, because I've been, obviously that's like a very general statement because it's huge, but I've been to Yosemite. I just drove through it. We didn't stay there because we went from, I think, Vegas to San Francisco. I don't even remember how, but it's so vast and so. I remember also driving through Death Valley and just being, even though there's not much there, just being so, feeling so free to have all this space. Do you live in, or in Oregon, do you live in the like more in like a nature area, or is it closer to the cities?
It's pretty close to the cities. Like Portland is the major city in Oregon, and we're an hour south of Portland. And so, there's definitely a lot of cities around. It's been a big adjustment being here in Montana, where it's like the closest major city is 3 hours from where we are. And so Montana is very rural, and there's like rural Montana and then frontier Montana, which is like even more like less densely populated. And so it's been a adjustment to just like have so much space, which is also like very reflective of like what's going on internally for me right now. It's like just being okay with having more time, having more space, having like the openness and having the surroundings reflect that has been a really interesting experience.
How do you feel with all that? Like, as you're saying, the internal process of having more openness and more space.
Yeah, I think it was like, I was quite depressed the first 6 months of being here.
Mm-hmm.
And so like within the last month, I've become more like, okay, like everything's just kind of quieted down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And like where before it was like, I don't know if you are into poetry. One of my favorite poets is Rilke.
Mm-hmm. I read a Letters to a Young Poet.
He talks all about like solitude and loneliness and like befriending that and being okay with that. And that is like not something that I've ever really had to do before being here. And so I feel like I'm just now getting to the place where it's like, oh, like now I get it. Like I can be my own person and my own friend. And of course I like have community and want that as well, but there's like this balance that has to happen where like internally we have to be okay with those seasons of like quietness,
mm-hmm.
where there's nothing going on and it's dark out and very cold, and just being okay with that. And like that internal darkness too, of like, yeah, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to like be with myself and what I'm experiencing and all of that.
Yeah, and I can imagine as a reflector that, you know, that there's so much, because you're as a ref, like many like often reflectors are so used to being conditioned by the outside world that when mm-hmm. they spend more time in their own aura, there's this kind of shedding of all these layers of conditioning and projections that they have mm-hmm. taken on over the years by just spending a lot of time with other people.
Mm.
And especially as a reflector, I can totally understand how spending so much time within yourself and having this experience of solitude and being on your own, that there can be some, you know, confusion of, you know, who am I? Who am I if I'm not in the world?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been so true for me. And it's like that, I think that really scared me at first of like, who am I? What am I doing here? Like, am I meant to be a therapist? Am I meant to do this work? And yeah, so it's been like, I feel very much that process of shedding like all the identities and all the projections that I've taken on and really just being okay with like who I am at my core and just like that. I don't know. It's still very much a process, I guess, but I'm coming to find that to be very true. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That you say that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also with probably going through like a very wintry winter over mm-hmm. there where you're living, it can be a reflection of this inner darkness that maybe it's sometimes we didn't really make time to process and to feel. And then when it all comes up at the same time, you know, at once,
mm-hmm.
can be very overwhelming. And I feel like, because so many people suffer with seasonal depression and because we're also not used to living seasonally anymore,
right?
You know, we're not really tuning our body to the outer seasons, let alone mm-hmm. to our inner seasons, you know, our menstrual cycle or
absolutely
Yeah. I read Letters to a Young Poet, I think right after New Year's, and I read it in like 2 hours because it's like a very short book.
Yeah.
But I resonated so deeply with how he talked about this solitude. Because I've also always had this pull towards, like, away from society, away from the world, and away from all the noise. But I can't, at this point, I can't seem to find, like, I'm always caught up in whatever is going on outside. It's so hard for me at this point to actually commit to these periods of intentional solitude. Because it's so easy to get distracted, you know, it's so easy to answer, you know, invitations or to go out and meet people, and or even just when you're inside on your own and you're online and you're kind of intaking all this external information, and it's really a relearning. A relearning of being in your own space. And I think his words have really helped me see the value in that. And I think Woman Who Run With the Wolves also talks about this several times, about how it's like we need this solitude. We need to be in our own space. We need to be in our own experience, because that's where the creative process kind of unfolds. What's your experience with creativity, and how do you see that?
It's very it's something that I struggle with in that way, because I feel like, oh, I wish I could just put everything on hold. Like, I wish life could just stop for like 3 weeks. And so, creativity for me is like, it happens in like very stolen moments, I guess, of like, I'm just gonna, you know, sit down and write for a while, and, or I'm just gonna like, I don't know, just, I play piano as well. And so like sit at my piano and play whatever comes to mind. But it's like, it is so hard to like find that spaciousness where it's like easy to do. And so, I don't know, for me, it's been a process of like, giving myself a lot of grace that like, it's a busy season. It has been, I guess, as I've been in school, but like, it's okay also that like, I don't have very much time to put into this. I can still make time to like, even if it's just a few minutes. And I think one of the things that like Clarissa Pinkola Estes talks about is like, I forget which story this is in, but talks about like how as women we're like so tempted to like have our environments be perfect, and she talks about like, oh, you know, it's so much easier to like clean the house and then sit down and do whatever it is that you're trying to do. And it's like, no, like I can't, like, and so like making that boundary of like, this is never going to feel like it's the right time right now. Like, and that's okay too. And just being okay with like the imperfect creations that come, and like the, I don't know, just that idea of the imperfect being so important too.
Yeah. I remember that passage where she's like, people can take care of themselves. You know, you don't have to manage all the requests. Your cat can, you know, because something I do often is I love to go away for a longer period of time to just be. At first I thought it was kind of like running away, but now it's just like having the space to just be myself without all the external expectations. I'm still getting why I need that and why that desire is there. But now it's like, no, I can't go because my cats, like, I love my cat so much and I can't leave her. And there's this one sentence in her book when she says, your friend or your cats will also be happy when taken care of by someone else. Or I don't know how she phrased it, but I was like, oh, okay. I always thought I had to be there for her. I can't leave her. But it's like using that as an excuse not to go and do the thing that you need to do.
Yeah. Because that's what we're conditioned to do, is like strive for that perfection. And like needing things to be a certain way before we can like turn inward. And it's like, no, you can turn inward and in any moment.
But it can be so hard when, oh, I think my, oh, Toulouse.
Ah, she hears us talking.
She heard me talking about her. She's like, no.
Cute.
It's like learning to also be okay with disappointing people. And prioritizing your own, you know, vision, essentially.
Absolutely. And
I feel like it's so easy to have the vision and then not making the time to actually materialize it, because not only are there the doubts and the fears, but there's always something else that needs to be done. I'm curious, this is probably a very big question, but what's your vision for yourself or for the world or your community or your work or whatever, however that question resonates?
I love that question. What comes to mind for me is, I've been reading a lot of John O'Donohue, who is like I'm going to say this wrong, but Celtic spirituality. He talks a lot about like the importance of beauty and how we need to like carry something beautiful in our heart, especially when the world is in so much pain. And that has really resonated with me as far as like my vision for my work and for myself and for the world also, is to just be like a more beautiful place. Like, I don't know. There's like, whether it's in my, like, I'm planning to do like a private practice for my psychotherapy, and then also have like energetic work that I do on the side. And like both of those, I feel, are very much grounded in like helping people connect to the beauty that's within them, so that they can be like, they can contribute to a more beautiful world, which sounds cliche perhaps, but like that's kind of my vision.
I feel like beauty has been really cast aside as this superficial, unnecessary thing or energy or characteristic or whatever, but it is, when you're on this path of the feminine and embodiment and embodying the divine feminine, it is about beauty. It's just our essence. That is our way of experiencing the world. And I think as humans in general, it's all about beauty. It's all about how can we find the beauty in within ourselves, and how can we make our daily reality more beautiful on a very practical level, like tending to my altar and tending to my candles and making sure that my crystals and my shells are lined up and the way that I make my tea you know, it's, I think for a long time also when I was more into the more practical and more, I would say masculine, but not in a like man, but more as like an archetype period of life when I was practicing more strict spiritual practices or lineages, that there was this idea that I couldn't enjoy beauty. And I stopped wearing all makeup. I stopped taking care of myself. I stopped wearing nice clothes. And that doesn't mean it has to be expensive but just like this essence of like the textures that you wear and the smells that you smell and the oils that you put in your hair or the oils that you put on your body. And there was nothing of that. It was really like something that left my life for a long time. And now for the past year, it's about, okay, how can I take a bath and light my candle and bring in my Palo Santo and listen to my music and afterwards really massage my body with these oils. And when you're doing that, it is like an act of divinity, it feels like.
You know? Totally.
So it's anything but superficial, and it's anything but unnecessary. You know, I think
it's like the heart of everything.
And I also, that's a feeling I also get when I'm looking at your work and your everything you do, that there's this essence of beauty interwoven into everything, like every word and every picture and every, like, the way that you share your energy. And I can really appreciate that on a very deep level, and not just, okay, it's beautiful, but very much like, okay, there's attention to detail. There's attention to how do I want to make someone feel when they come across something of mine or my creations, and touching something deeper on like a more like a cellular level.
Means so much to hear you say that. That's like, that's my intention, and so I'm so glad that that's what your experience has been.
So now that you are almost finished with your degree, what's the plan if there is any? There doesn't have to be any at all, whatever, so whatsoever.
No, there is. I'm gonna do, so in Oregon, to get licensed as a psychologist, you do like a year of supervised practice, and so that can look different ways, but for me, I found a supervisor that's gonna supervise me in private practice, and so I'm gonna be starting up my own therapy business and hoping to be able to get enough hours in that I can get licensed and then work in private practice. So,
And I'm curious, your body prayer sessions, are they online sessions or?
They're online.
They're online. And what do they look like, or what's the intention behind those?
So those are, I guess my intention with those sessions is like to help people connect like energetically within, and use using the chakra system and using like five element Chinese theory. And I'm really like, I'm hoping eventually to be certified as a kinesiologist. I did a mentorship last year with a woman called Zoe Bosco. I don't know if you know her.
No.
But she's a kinesiologist out of Australia who incorporates like muscle testing and kind of like reading the field, I guess. I'm not describing this very well, but it was like a really incredible experience. And she has a practitioner program, but I'm just putting this out there into the world that I would love to participate in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like with my body prayer sessions, right now it's like very kind of like a guided meditation can be, but like connecting inward, going through the energy centers, working with an intention that someone brings, calling in like divine figures that they may connect to, or like guides or angels or whatever that looks like. And then just having that space to like connect inward, be witnessed, and sort of like shift internally the energy that is there. Yeah. So yeah,
that's amazing.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah,
it's very much like it's always in some type of growth, some type of development. Like I feel like in the past my energy sessions have I don't know, they're never like a static thing, or they're never like they don't ever look one way. Like I think it's so like dependent on who is there and who, like what they're bringing in and what they're hoping to gain from it. And so it's a little bit hard, like I have a hard time describing like what it looks like, but I hope that the intention is coming through.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, it's the intention and the energy, and then the words, they'll land anyway, you know. I'm not sure when, but in the future, I've been planning this for a while now, but I'm gonna create this online portal membership kind of space for people to really connect to this essence of yin and this really yin energy. Yeah. And I'd love for you to obviously we'll explore this later, and I know as a reflector you need a longer time to kind of feel things out and see, you know, what feels right. But I would love for you to at some point do some kind of workshop on the archetypes or, you know, feminine embodiment or anything that we talked about today. And I think that would be really beautiful, a really beautiful addition to the yin practices and the meditations and the workshops that I'll be teaching. But that's the vision, and I'm trying to kind of bring it into form, and it's taking a lot longer than my mind wants it to be. And I'm just trying to also in this process trust the body and not kind of go past my own pace and rhythm. And
what a beautiful vision though.
It's a vision. It's a vision. And now it's all about just trusting that the right support will be there and the right timing, and it would all come into form whenever the world, or whenever I'm ready, I guess.
Absolutely. And trusting that the pacing and the timing of that. It's so good.
So
good.
Yeah.
So I loved getting to look at your page as well, and just the way that you share and how your essence comes through. And I know I was using the translate button because a lot of it is in your language, but just like, yeah, just felt so much resonance with everything that you're doing. And I think that our paths could very like well support each other.
Yeah, definitely. There's a reason why I felt very called to just talk to you. And there's also just like there's like no pressure. It's just about, you know, what comes up and whatever we want to share. And I remember when just before I sat down here and prepared the whole space, I was like, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I have no idea where this is going to go, but I'm trusting that this is what needed to happen.
Yeah, I would love for you to get, like, because I love reading. I'm curious about your profile. So maybe after this, you can send me your information. I can give you some, like, insights into your into your body graph, into your human design chart. Because I'm in, there's that. like you have the profile, like a profile, and it's like two numbers. And when you have the one in your profile, it's the investigator, and it's all about reading and exploring. And I just, sometimes it's just for hours and hours that I'm reading my books and listening to all the, like, the podcasts and watching all the videos about this very specific niche topic that no one else talks about or knows about, you know, it's always very specific. So I would love to also receive your book recommendations. I can also share them in the notes of the books that you talked about today. And if there's any other books that you feel like would match or kind of support the conversation that we were having today, and then people can go and do their own research and own exploration at their own time and in their own way. But I'm definitely gonna read the other Jungian analyst that you mentioned, with the wolves, and I'm rereading it all the time and just coming back to different chapters depending on what's happening and what's going on and what I'm feeling. But I'd love to dive a lot deeper, and I'm really feeling so called to explore Jungian psychology, and yeah, I would love to. It's, maybe we can do like a workshop on, or something on that, and you can,
that'd be so fun.
Share all your knowledge and all your insights with your very gentle energy. That would be so amazing.
Definitely, that'd be beautiful.
I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to share, or anything else that's coming up or coming through.
No, I just love to hear, like, your books as well. And definitely, like, that investigator topic. So
I'm thinking you would be a one. Well, my main recommendation at this point is the Gene Keys book. I've been studying it for a year now, and I just, for me, it's like a synthesis of all the spiritual knowledge that's out there. Like, he brings Christianity together with Buddhism, together with the chakra system, together with, you know, the yin and the yang, TCM, Taoism, which I'm also very curious about. I don't know if you've had any experience with Taoism or
not a lot.
So, because it is, I feel like,
in it too.
Yeah, because I feel like it's also this very yin compared to, for example, Zen Buddhism. I recently went to a session, like a meditation session, in the Zen Buddhistic Center here close by. And there was, like, so many rules, and obviously there's a lot of value and so much wisdom there, but there were many rules, and like, you have to sit like this, and you have to do it like this, and you have to enter the room like this. And I just felt my body being very, like, feeling very restricted, and, like, you know, it didn't feel correct for me at that time. But I feel like Taoism is more of the yin path of surrender and trust. So I'm curious. But Lauren, report back.
Great. There's always so much more to explore, to learn.